recorded live by jml.org.au.
When I was in year 11, we took a course on public speaking. It was one of the things that the government, one of the things that the high school required. What made it very interesting is that it was actually a college level course. What the school did is they tried to incorporate in years 10, 11, and 12 as many college courses as part of their high school curriculum, and this way the girls would earn credits at the same time, completing one unit of study both in high school but actually getting college credit for it. So we took this class in public speaking. And one of the things that they teach you in public speaking is you never begin with an apology. So I'm going to apologize right now that I am not Mrs. Jacks. I'm going to do the very best I can to deliver her shiur without having spoken to her and knowing where she was going with this. But when I saw the topic, and I was asked by Rabbi Schmerling if I'd be willing to give a shiur, I thought the topic is too important not to speak about it. So I'm going to endeavor, using her material that she did prepare and the source sheets I'll leave on the table here for anyone who's interested, we'll go through them, but I don't know where she was going with it. I'll give you my perspective on it. So we'll start with an apology, which you should never ever do. We'll move right on. The shiur is titled Choosing an Attitude to Enhance My Avodah. And it's quite an important one. Attitude is something which everyone acknowledges its importance. In schools, you walk into a school and you'll invariably see somewhere on the boards or on the walls statements about attitude, empowering attitude. Attitude is the color that paints your world. Things like that. We all acknowledge the importance of attitude. This year, we were very lucky to be able to go home to my little brother's bar mitzvah. I'm the oldest, he's the youngest, and we finally decided, fine, bar mitzvah, we're schlepping. We went the whole family. Still, we'll be paying it off for a lot of years to come, but it was worth it. Being that we went for Pesach, it meant with Sfira having to travel around the world. We couldn't come back directly to Melbourne. So instead of going Melbourne, LA, and then to Denver, we ended up going Melbourne, LA, Denver, Denver, London, Dubai, Melbourne, in order to not miss out any Sfira. When we stopped in London, we had a 10-hour stopover. And in this 10-hour stopover, my husband has family, has siblings in London. My sister-in-law suggested that we go and hear a speaker who was speaking about some aspect of psychology, which really turns modern psychology on its head. Because modern psychology is all about looking, and maybe I can sound correct if there are any psychologists in the room, but my understanding of it is that it looks into what is difficult for you and what you struggle with and tries to find a source for it in your past. So it could be that your mother passed you one too many times, or you never got what you wanted and therefore you act out, or whatever it is, it looks into your past as excusing the issues that you have or dealing, therefore let's deal with this initial issue to deal with whatever you're dealing with now. And this speaker that we went to hear turns it all on its head. Without going too much into detail, there's different principles about consciousness. The point was that our minds are bombarded with thought. Non-stop. We have thousands and thousands of thoughts running through our minds. But we choose which ones to jump aboard and adopt as our mode of thinking. So we actually choose. See, so for example, you go to a family gathering. Now, family reunions are, everyone's got an uncle or an aunt that, nobody wants to know or everyone wants to poke fun of or whatever. And then there's somebody's going to make a comment on, what you ate or what you didn't eat or count what you ate and what you're wearing and, why didn't you do this and do that? Suddenly it's a topic of conversation. Everyone goes to family reunions. Someone's going to say something. And so there's a negative connotation with the family. And the thought is that, one second, is it really the difficulty with the family reunion? Is that the problem? I'll break it down further, no offense to any mother-in-laws, right? There's this jokes running rampant, mother-in-laws, daughter-in-laws. Always, right? Mother-in-laws are impossible to get on with. I happen to know a lot of mother-in-laws, all lovely people. What makes them so difficult? So essentially, there are these thoughts that run through our minds all the time. We harp on which ones to pick on. But the thoughts that we pick dictate our experience. In other words, we create our own reality. What we perceive, our perception, becomes reality. It really doesn't sound like such a chiddush. If you think about it, well, essentially, that's an attitude. Your thought creates an attitude, and your attitude is then how you approach a situation. So going back to the mother-in-law, it's not that your mother-in-law is such a bad person. It's that she said something, you took it a certain way, And then you characterized your entire relationship based on a comment or a thought that you had, which wasn't positive. Same thing with a family situation. Somebody says something, you get the thought in your mind, you harp on the thought, and it colors your whole experience. Right? So it's interesting because everyone has, you know, for example, students. Students will pick which teachers they like, which teachers they don't like, which classes they don't like. Usually these are things that thoughts that popped in their head. For some reason they chose a thought and ran with it. And that's what dictates their experience. So if you understand it, once we understand this concept that there are thousands of thoughts in our head, we consciously choose which ones we want to go with. It changes your understanding of life. Because suddenly you realize this fate, I'm going to either like it or hate it, is really in your hands. And if I find myself on a negative trend, not enjoying an experience, not enjoying something, it means I jumped on a thought. So what do I need to do to change it? I have to just change my thought. By changing my thought, I automatically change my experience. Now, it might not be easy. And it might not be quick. And it might be something I need to work on. But even if it's 1% better, is it already better? Mm-hmm. It's already better. So it's an extremely powerful thing. So in my jet lag-induced state, this is what I walked away with. But attitude is an amazing thing. And if we think about it in the scope of life and realize that we really do choose our attitude, and really these are thoughts, our minds are bombarded with thought. And the theory goes on to say, therefore, you really have all the answers. You just need to settle yourself. And I don't know how many people have this experience. You go in the shower, and suddenly you remember everything. Mm. You walk out. The problem is you can't use a whiteboard marker in the shower because it's going to fall out. The person who invents a writing mechanism in the shower, he has my investment. I will invest in that company because if anyone's like me, why don't I remember everything in the shower? Or right when you lie down. Sorry? When you're down in Shimona Esrei. That's when you remember everything. Can't do anything about it. Or when you lie down to sleep. You know, sometimes I lie down to sleep, my mind won't shut off. Suddenly I have 1,000 things in my head. I have to do this. I'm so tired. Be quiet. My mind won't be quiet. So just so I give you the full thing about the person's book about. So he says essentially we need to be quiet sometimes. We need to make ourselves quiet, and the answers come to you when you're grappling with something. And you don't know what to do. You know, obviously we speak to Mashpia, we speak to people who have our best interests at heart, our rabbis, our families, etc. But sometimes even in the little things, it's when you just wait for quiet in yourself. And you then remember that the things come to you. So that's a very interesting thing, just dealing with thoughts. So attitude is extremely important, but it's also something that really is within our hands. If we acknowledge that it comes from thought, and we pick the thoughts, then we can pick our attitudes. So let's leave attitude for the side. Let's deal with us, women. Women are very, 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 probably one of God's best creations, if we can dare say that there is a best. There's plenty of jokes, you know, why man was created first, woman second. You always make a draft before you make a masterpiece. So there's always plenty of things. But women, and I think Rabbi Jack said yesterday, we're not bound by the mitzvahs of time because we have one central mitzvah, and that is the mitzvah of influencing our families and those around us, educating those, our families and those around us. So whether or not we are teachers, we are all teachers. And whether or not we feel that we influence, we are all influencers. That is the nature of a woman, to give. So if we women are givers, we also have to watch very carefully what it is we're giving. We're all affected by our attitudes. But our attitudes are also, therefore, passed on. Right? I don't know how many women are going to shoot me off, step back here. We're 13 weeks away from Pesach. Right? And you hear the reaction right away. Oh, everyone gets nervous. Everyone gets panicky. You walk into shul. New, how's Pesach? Can't wait for it to be over. I'm sick of matzah. I've had enough. And for someone who loves Pesach, I'm an unadmittedly, unashamedly a lover of Pesach. I always use the question, am I the crazy one? Am I the crazy one? And I went back. I really think that a lot of my attitudes towards Pesach come from my mother's attitudes towards Pesach. I inherited her love of Pesach. For her, making Pesach wasn't a stress-inducing, life-shattering event. It was a fantastic induced diet, which you're going to stick to because you have no choice no matter what. You're not paying anybody money for it, and you didn't have to read any books, and you're going to eat healthy for a week. It's family time. There's no one has to go anywhere. You sit around the table. You enjoy. No yeast, no sugar. It's good for you. You clean the house. Such cleanliness. A machai alavai. The house is like this the whole year long. That's how we grew up with Pesach. It was an exciting time. Chol HaMoed, we used to go out with family. It was always a time that there wasn't very much stress other than maybe shredding the chrein, the maror. That was probably the worst part because, you know, invariably you would cry. But there was laughter by the Sadarim, and then even in the process, we used to know Pesach was coming because we used to come home from school, and my mother was standing on a chair on top of the dining room table with a baby bath under the chandelier, and she'd be pouring water all over the chandelier, and the bugs would be flying out, a year collection of moths and who knows what else, and we used to laugh and say, Mommy, who put chametz up there? So it's not that she made very light, a light Pesach, you know, really just the crumbs. No, my mother did a full, thorough spring clean as well. But at the same time, it was never stress-inducing. And it really made me think about attitude and how we pass it on.
Did you ever ask how she did it?
No. We never discussed it. But I think that's the power of the message, is that as women, we pass on attitude as well. With all that we say and all that we do, we pass on the attitude. As the child who comes home from school, invariably there are two things running through their mind. What's for dinner, and what kind of mood is my mother in? A man comes home from work, same thing. What's for dinner, and what kind of mood is my wife in? Right? And we come home, we just ask what's for dinner. We don't think what kind of mood are we in. But it's so important to be thoughtful and aware of our own attitudes because we pass them on.
Brocha, I heard a story once about, I know I'm going to get the story wrong, but there was a guy who grew up in a Shom Shabbos home, and his father was always stressed during Shabbos, and he would come home and he would say, it's almost Shabbos, you know, and he would be very stressed. And to cut a long story short, his son grew up being not Shom Shabbos. And one day the father asked him, why aren't you Shomer Shabbos? And he said, I don't want to put my kids through that, because you were always almost abusive on Friday afternoons.
It's a very good point. It leads me to two things. I want to jump on it. First of all, in the early 1900s, in America especially, I'm sure it happened in other communities as well, but especially in America, people came to America, the golden land, the golden Medina, they expected the streets to be paved with gold and quickly learned that that wasn't the reality. And if you wanted to stay true to Judaism, life became difficult, really difficult. You could not work on Shabbos, right? Which meant that you were fired every Friday or every Monday. When you didn't show up on Saturday, you were fired Monday. Life was very hard. There was a generation of Jews who had a motto, Shver Tzayin Yid, it's hard to be Jewish. With that kind of an upbringing, is it no doubt that in the 40s and the 50s, there was huge amounts of children lost to Jewish faith because they grew up with it's so difficult to be Jewish. That's the attitude that they grew up with. So obviously what happened, the same thing as in the story. The children internalize that it's so difficult. We as the givers of attitude to our family have to be so careful in the messages that we share. Are we passing on this horrific fear of Pesach? Just as an example.
I try and pass all these messages to my kids and saying stuff. I always try and make it, like you said, with the attitude. I don't think my kids buy it sometimes. I think they can see that I'm not excited about Shabbos or wanting to
have
it.
We're going to talk about
it.
We're going to get there. Okay, if I don't answer your question, ask again.
What? Fake it to you.
I'm faking it, but I just, my kids don't.
I'll give you some insight. But the thing is that kids see straight through us. Yes. They see straight through us. If we're not 100% genuine, they all pick up on it like that. And you could have all kinds of, they know it straight away, right? So I'll give you just a quick anecdote. Somebody was in the lolly in the supermarket, and they were in the lolly aisle. You may have heard this joke. And they see a child, children typically do. You know, beg, I want a chocolate. And the mother's chopping, you can't have a chocolate. I said no, but I want the chocolate now. I said no, it's almost dinner time. And the, you know, the person's, you know, pretending they don't hear anything, but, you know, every mother can identify with this story. And sure enough, kid keeps on going. Finally, the mother turns around and said, it's not kosher! Turns around. That's funny, I don't remember anyone Jewish in this aisle. Turns around. A dark, dark-skinned, African-American, singlet, tank top, shorts, all kind of thing. That's not kosher. It's okay, listen, you can't judge an appearance. So I went over to him and said, listen, I'm sorry, Tim, I overheard, you know, typical arguments that happens. Are you Jewish? No, I'm not, but it works for you guys. Why? Because children know when we go to the supermarket, it's not kosher, it's a deal breaker. Nothing's coming out of it. It's not kosher means you don't care what you do, I don't care what kind of tantrum you're going to throw, you're not getting the lolly, right? But in other things, ice cream before dinner, well, that's negotiable, right? So they know when to push the buttons. Kids see straight through us, and it's an excellent point, Simcha, and I'll give you some insight, and we'll discuss a little further. The other thing that Dina raised that I want to address is Erev Shabbos. Erev Shabbos, traditionally, in every single home, after Chatzais, after midday, is a time of lachas, especially the closer you get to Shabbos. There's nothing wrong with anyone. This is normal. And it goes back.
You come to my house and tell my husband that.
I'll tell you why it's normal. It goes back to the original Erev Shabbat. Adam and Chava and Chet Et Hadas happened right before Shabbos. That's when the Satan had koach, right? He got called to sin. And every Erev Shabbos, he gets his fill again, and he comes into every Jewish home to see who can muck around.
Yeah, well, my husband thinks I'm the only woman who's not ready on Friday.
It doesn't matter how ready you are. A woman who was ready Thursday night will still have lachas in her house before Shabbat because of Chet Eitz Hadas. So now that you are aware of where it comes from and how normal it is, we incorporate into our thinking, we can choose an attitude. We can choose a thought. Instead of raising my voice, and screaming or yelling at the children, where is this coming from? This is the Satan at work. This is not my lack of preparation. When do we normally lose control? When we feel like, hey, I worked so hard and it's still not happening. What is it? Why am I the only one working so hard? But if you realize for a second, this is not just about you. There's some other force at play here. And you choose to be the positive. You choose to do what's right to rectify the mistake that Chava made. And then, so, whatever will be. Shabbos will still come. You will still have food in the house. So, not every table will have a lace doily on it. Nishkeferlach. Right? It's much more important. And I, from experience, there was one Shabbos in my life, I'm not proud of it. I had an Erev Shabbos no one should ever have. And I went to Ben Shlich, tears pouring down my face. I was miserable. I was angry at myself. I was angry at everyone in the house. I was angry at the house. I was angry at the food. I was angry about the food. I was just plain old angry. And because I was so angry, I was angry at myself for being angry. And I came to Ben Shlich in the worst frame of mind ever. Physically, I was bawling. And I said to myself, it's ridiculous. What a way to Ben Shlich. You're not supposed to light your candles like this. You're bringing in Shalom. You're bringing in Shabbos, which is the rest, the Nuchah. And you're sitting and crying like a... It's not the way to Ben Shlich. And I made myself a promise right then and there. I wasn't going to do it, not to myself. I went to Ben Shlich like a mensch. I was miserable. It's not fair to me. It's not fair to my family. It's not what Hashem wants from me. So I chose right then and there to work on my Erev Shabbos. So anything that helps my attitude, because I still get challenged every Friday. The Satan is still working in my house every Friday. So it's something that I actually physically have to work on to choose a thought, a positive, is going to adopt a positive attitude. And this is interesting, because this teaches us Mayach Shalit Al Halev, that our mind has to rule the heart, right? But we'll say, one second, feelings and experience comes from emotion. How can you rule your emotion? Well, this is what the thought. Attitude is usually an emotion. It's not always, but not. It comes through thoughts. We have to use our minds to control the negative thoughts and ensure that we have positive ones. Okay, let's go back to this here. So it's very, very interesting, a few things. First of all, if we look at this week's Parsha, which Rabbi Jacks mentioned a few times, Parsha Shmos, which is the story of Pesach. So definitely a process there. But it's a fascinating story. It's a time of exile, a time of galut, a time when there is enslavement. And the men, as we see in the Parsha, the men have had it. They have given up completely and entirely. One of the shiurim, Rabbi Jack said that one of the things that, I think it was last night, about education, you mentioned that, yesterday morning, I'm mixing up day and night today. But he said that one of our roles to educate doesn't go away. And when we look at what we're supposed to be doing, it's a goal that we always do. So whereas the men gave up and said to their wives, don't come near me, we've had enough. We can't bring children into such a world. Who can have children in such a world? It's finished. The woman said, what do you mean it's finished? To say it's finished is to finish yourself. You're giving up on the very thing we are meant to do. Hashem wants that there should be generations of Jews keeping Torah and Mitzvot. That is our role as a people. That is why we have survived. To say no, to give up, is to be the one who cuts off Klal Yisrael. So in that difficult situation, what do the women do? They adopt positive attitude. Put the positive attitude into action. They dress themselves up. They made themselves beautiful, and they went to their husbands. And from that came beautiful children. Now that's all very beautiful, right? Now I'm going to tell you that each of those was 6 children at a time. The Mepharshim tell us when a woman gave birth to Mitzrayim, she had 6 babies. You'd say, is she crazy? Who would run into that situation willingly? Attitude. It's an amazing thing. The Pasuk tells us, and this is one of the sources that that Mrs. Jack said prepared, Vayomer Melech Mitzrayim Yimiyal Dosa Ivriyik. Asher Shem Acha Acha Shifra B'Shem Asher Eskua. Pari said, Melech Mitzrayim said to the midwives, the Jewish midwives, one of their names, the first one's name was Shifra, the second one was Pua. And Rashi comments, and he says, Shifra Zoyo Chevet. Shifra was a Chevet. Because of her job with what she was, Shemash Peres Es Havlat, that she would make the child clean and nice, and Pua Zumirion, Hashem Shekho'at Megaveret Mugalavlat, that she would woo and say kuchiku to the babies and calm the babies down. But the Mepharshim said, one second, Rashi is a commentary who always gives pshat. He speaks pshut HaShemekor. He explains according to what it says. He doesn't give remez and sod and signs and symbolism. Why isn't he just accepting that these were the women's names? Why is he coming to say these were 2 different women? That they these were actually different names. Especially the whole thing, we had names. So don't change names, right? So why were they Shifra and Pua? Rashi's coming to say it's really Yocheved and Miriam. That you can make the whole story an even bigger question. Two Jewish women once. How many Jewish women were there? I know I've had one baby, I know how many midwives were in the room. Right? And here these women were having 6 babies at a time. There's only 2 midwives for all these Jewish women? I mean, how many midwives are on roster in any maternity hospital? You're not going to find 2. You're going to find a lot more than that. So how could it possibly be that in this kind of situation, you have 2 midwives? So some will say that Pshat answers it, because later the Miyazis, the midwives, say to Pari, by the time we get to the birth, to the women, they've given birth already. We're not even there, really. Right? They're just, we don't have much to do. They've already given birth. So the first one was saying, well, one second. So if the women already gave birth, the women need midwives altogether. Mm-hmm. And the fact that there are only 2 of them, there's got to be something deeper in this whole story. So the Rebbe explains that the whole, and this goes back to why Rashi actually goes and deviates from his normal. And Rashi's normal is always to accept Shat. He deviates from his normal and he says, no, Shifra and Pua, Yocheved and Miriam. Why? Because he's coming out to show us that these 2 women were Tzidkaniyot, that they were very holy women. How does that answer? What difference does it make? They were midwives, holy or not holy. They had a job to do. But the Rebbe explains, because these 2 women were holy women, it was enough to have 2 for all the women of Bnei Israel. And it was fine if they didn't even make it to the birth,
with which the woman gave birth 6 babies at once. Because the attitude that the women had, knowing that the midwives were tzidkaniyot, was enough to calm their psyche, to give them good feelings, for them to carry on and do what they needed to do. So even with big things, it's an unbelievable thing to realize the power of an attitude and the power of thought. So to go a little bit further, and you said before, that, you know, this is something we all struggle with, whether it's on a daily basis or only Erev Shabbos or only Pesach, this is something that's a struggle. Chassidus teaches that klipa, how do you translate klipa? How would you translate this, Gordon, klipa? But you have two forces, okay? You have the force of dusha, which is holiness, and the opposite is klipa. The klipa, it's the way it expresses itself is in coldness. In coldness. And kedusha is warmth. It's the warmth.
It's like a kavini type of.
Okay.
Yeah.
But in life, in the world, everything has to be in balance. And especially, Hashem created everything in balance. For example, when we had, you know, you look in Tanakh, and the Jews keep getting in trouble because they keep being worshipping Avodah Zarah. And to most of us, it makes no sense. How could anybody bow to a tree, bow to a rock? And some of these Avodah Zarah are crazy. Take your child, pass them through fire. Defecate in front of an idol. I mean, these things don't make sense.
But also, at that time, there was like a force that made them do it. They didn't know what they were doing. They were kind of under a sort of like a spell.
It's very strange. Mm. So there was this negative force, but at the same time they have the positive force, because it always has to be balanced. And the positive force was Nevuah, prophecy. And all these times they had prophets to go to. When we lost Nevuah, when prophecy was taken from us, we also lost this cheshek, this desire for Avodah Zarah. So therefore none of us really understand what it means to overwhelmingly want to have a desire to serve an idol. We don't understand it. It was completely taken away. At the same time, we lost the positive because there always has to be a balance. So, as well, with kedusha, which is warmth, and klipa, which is coldness, there's klipa came to 1 second. If it's so obvious, then we're always obviously going to choose the warmth. Anything that's cold or, you know, it's, no, we won't go there. We'll always go to the positive. But then I've taken away your free choice. Right? Because there's no free choice. It's not an option. It's not an option. If I should give you 2 bills, and one is green, and one is purple, one is 100, and one is 5, who's going to take the 5? We're all going to take the 100. So the choice is made. And it can't be that way. Everything is a balance because we have choice in everything. So Klipa was Mislavish, she was dressed in the desire for materialism. And that kind of covers over. It's not so easy now to tell. Because desire for something is a warmth also. So one can turn around and say, 1 second. I understand in my attitude. Right? I won't have a good attitude, but I won't have a bad attitude either. I'll just be in the middle. I'll just be apathetic. Right? I just won't care either way. Is that okay?
No.
Not really.
Why?
It doesn't mean anything, really.
What's the problem? So what does it mean? So what does it mean? So what?
Well, it can, but it can't. Like, it's not, you know?
Yes. See, so you're not here, and you're not there. Mm-hmm. If you're not here, and you're not there, what's going to happen? Can you truly straddle a fence? Life is an escalator. You're either going up, or you're going down. You always have to move on the escalator, because the minute you stop moving, you are either going to go up or you're going to go down, depending on which escalator you're on. But you always have to move, right? So being apathetic, not caring this way or that way, is a step towards kalkite, towards being cold. So if someone doesn't care, what's the next step? How many adults together? I don't even know together. So apathy, to say that I don't have to be warm and alive and caring about it, because that's not good either. That's going to lead you to the opposite way, to the clipper side, to the coldness, which we don't want. One more thought that she had here, that she that Mrs. Jasper Kerr was very interesting. The word bisimcha is the same word, same letters as machshava. Right? To be bisimcha, to be in happiness, same letters as our thoughts. So we see that it truly is something we can put into our minds and make our attitude. Now, if our attitude is positive, then it's going to automatically affect our avodah, our way of what we're doing. Especially, I think, when it's our avodah, that's when we have to work the hardest to ensure that we're positive. Because as women, that's when we teach others, that's when we give up off to others. And it's very, very important that we're giving off the right thing. And we know it's doable, because we know the premise of Moach Shalit Adalei, and these are coming from thoughts. And these are thoughts that we have to make sure to choose the right ones in order to influence our thoughts. And the last thought I want to leave you with is immediately putting it into practice, because we know as teachers that if you do not leave your students with something that they can immediately use, then you may well not have told them anything. So one way we're going to utilize this immediately by thinking how to use attitude in our work. Like we said, we're all teachers. Right? We're all givers to those around us. That is the nature of women, we give. And many of us are also mothers. In the morning, we wake up in the morning and we say, Moda ani lefanecha, thankful to you, Hashem, Melech HaDekayim, the living king, that you have returned my neshama to me. And literally, you can explain that Hashem is giving me my neshama. Let's think about it as a mother. I have not met a woman who can claim to be a perfect mother, or who believes in herself that she is a perfect mother. We are all filled sometimes with doubt. Have I done the right thing by this child? Maybe this child needed me to be different or do something different. Different children, our children are not in molds, right? They're all different, right? They may look different, they have different strengths, and you can have children in the same family and they're all entirely different. At the same time, though, we are always filled with doubt. And this beautiful thought I heard from Farah Gotnik in a share that she gave at the Sheikh Chabad convention a few years back. And she said, Mota Ani is the biggest proof that we're doing it right. Mota Ani Vefanecha. I am thankful to you, Hashem, Melech HaRekayim, living King, Shechazarta bi, that you've returned to me, Nishmati, my little Nishamot that you want me to care for, you've returned them to me. Hashem has the faith in us. Every day our children wake up whole and healthy, Baruch Hashem, He is telling us, I am entrusting you to do the best for this Nishama that I have given to you. And there's nothing more empowering than knowing that God believes in you. And that is a way that we can see our avodah. It puts the whole day in a different framework. Because you see, I'm waking up with my children. My children are healthy and well. God believes in me today to do the best for them and their development and to take care of them. And that, of course, applies as well to all our other neshamot, our spouses, our parents, our siblings, anyone else we love and care about. Hashem has left us and gives them to us to take care of. So positive attitude, especially when it comes to avodah for us, it's not negotiable. It's doable. We must do it because we influence other people. It changes us. It changes our experience. It makes it positive. And I wish you all hatzlacha rabba. And I'm in it, and I just want to thank you all for being here. We're off back to town today, but it's been a lovely experience. Our first Yafei Kala, we've loved it. Thank you, thank you, Rabbi and Mrs. Gordon, for putting it all together, and for the help of Rabbi and Mrs. Shmuley with the Shiurim, and for everyone who came and was a part of it. It was really, really kol hakavod and mechayel lechayel.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I just want to add about the
Rabbi Munashach.
faith and your faithfulness. Thank you, man. Your faith is your faith in me.
Exactly. So the word mamash fit in to that. But that just shows how positivity in our avodah, positive attitude in our avodah really could influence everything. When you look at Moedah Ani and you translate it in that way and it fits mamash like this, like a glove, it just changes your whole attitude in dealing with all the difficulties that rise up when taking care of children. Mm-hmm. Whether they are either little ones, like food and drink and toilet training and the rest of it, or the big ones, like the temper tantrums and the hashgacha issues, etc.
I just want to make a comment on that simple says. It's not like the answer to everything. And the kids do see through you, and they see when you're like trying, and then, oh, she's just trying, she's really mean. Yeah. But I think that every mother has like their little thing that they do that does come naturally. Like everyone has, you know, every single person here, you have your thing that's just your special thing, and those kinds of words roll up your tongue, or that action you just do so well, and every child will pick up that from their mother, and that will always be.
One more thing. I heard from the name of Rabbi Kukowski, who was just recently here from the Chovot, and he Baruch Hashem has many children. And one of the things he said is that even in the things that we struggle with, we need to talk to our children about that. Yeah. He said, you know, this is not the way it needs to be Erev Shabbat. Yeah. I've lost the plot. Yeah. It's me. Yeah. This is not, Shabbos is coming in, it has to come in Rucha, Shalom, and you have to explain to them. They have to see you working on yourself.
Yeah.
In order for them to know, no, I don't throw it out and say, oh, you know, this stretch is I need, forget it, I don't want to know about it. They have to realize, you know what, as a mother, I messed up today. Next time we're going to work on it together, it should be a bit better. What can I do? What can you do to help me? And the same thing with your children. When you see that they're going through a difficulty that you had experience with, share with them your experience. How you know, yes, when I was in school, also somebody called me your name, or a teacher picked on me, or whatever it is.
She's like, Shabbos is so hard, so it's just something like that. The first time, you know? And I said, yeah, it is. I mean, we've got this to do and that to do and that to do, but now, after I told her, it was like, oh, okay, so you're also stressed, right? So that's okay.
You but know, now you have to show her to her how it was meant to be.
Beautiful.
And how it's really beautiful. You don't want her internalizing the message that, oh, it's terrible.
Yeah.
Because anything we don't like, we don't stick with.
I know, it's so hard to be.
So we need to make sure. So, yes, it could be hard. It could be hard. And sometimes we put that pressure on ourselves.
Yeah.
Who says you need to have 3 types of fish and 4 types of meat? And who says you need to have soup when it's 45 degrees?
Yeah.
Right? So a lot of that pressure we could be putting on ourselves. That's not the way it should be. So we need to have a good hard look at ourselves and say, are we making it harder for ourselves? But at the same time, when we do share with our children, we make sure they see the beauty. Because yes, as human beings, we fall down. But it's no good falling down unless you plan on getting back up.
Yes.
Right? Yes.
I just wanted to say something to address that. I love this thing that probably everybody heard, that children don't do what you talk, but what you do. But then I'll say something even further. They don't do what you do, but what you feel. So from that perspective, even though, you know, you speak about us as mechanchim, because we are called orim, because we are teaching, but our children are very good teachers to us,
mm-hmm.
and Hashem wants us to improve, and a lot of time they are our mirror, because we don't even realize, like, it's already a step further when you know you're stressed or troubled. Obviously there's something there that you need to work on yourself. There are times that you don't even know what can you do best, you know, like, so keeping that in mind, like, if I am stressed on Shabbat, okay, so now we're more relaxed because we know that the Yetzerah is there. However, sometimes the Yetzerah is a bit stronger in terms of even before Shabbos comes in, like the defect of perfectionism. It's a huge one that Shabbat only will emphasize. So it's something that we have to work on, for instance, much before Shabbat. Like Shabbat, we stress that thing. So I think this is a blessing. This is a real blessing to internalize this, because if then we want to, our children to internalize something beautiful, and if we internalize what they are picking up and, you know, be able to overcome it by being honest, what's going really on here. It's not really Shabbos. A lot of times people say, oh, it's Shabbos, you know, Leavdil, the Goyim, they have one day a year, we have every week. But we have to really be honest about what's going on. Then, hopefully, automatically, the kids will pick up what we really feel.
Yeah, definitely. But
sorry,
that's
the next speaker just left. Should I just tell him to come back?
Yes, I'm actually
sorry.
Okay, thank you very much, ladies. I will call it there.
Thank you for listening to another one of our great recordings. We hope you enjoyed listening to this lecture and found it enriching and inspiring. To download and listen to many of our other recordings, please sign up today for a free membership via our website, www.jml.org.au.